Chapter 15. Relief. Another day closer to death. Devrus was in the forward observation post, right by the water. He had expected help after he had seen Hecaton burn. A week later, none had come, and the enemy were closer to Tyros than ever. A shell detonated in the harbour. Water spouted high, splattering Devrus with seawater, already turning foul. The enemy were close. The guns of the city wall were depressed to their lowest elevations. The enemy were coming within their minimum range, and so the guns pounded the harbour more than the foe. The air around Devrus's position was mixed with seawater, moist and salty.
"Fire!"
he shouted, hoarsely. He had said the word so many times it had become meaningless. Las cannons shot, their beams persisting long enough to register as a burning, phantom flicker upon the retina. Molten metal ran from the dozer blades of the Death Guard siege tanks, mingling with the rubble they pushed into the water. Devrus's hope that the enemy would abandon the mole and retreat from Tyros had gone unfulfilled. The arrival of the fleet spurred the enemy to a frenzy of activity. Work on the mole went into overdrive. Sickness sprang up in the streets of Tyros. Strange machine ailments compromised the city's defences. "Look to the mole," he thought. "There is the threat. Concentrate." Thousands of the walking dead shambled alongside the tanks. They lacked the will to be useful as workers, so the Death Guard chained rocks about their necks and sent them forth. Driven on by their need to savage living flesh, the dead reached the end of the causeway and tumbled right into the water, the stones dragging them down to wet graves in the foundations of the siege works. Devrus ordered his men not to shoot them. It took too many hits to put them down, and they could not spare the ammunition. Arms flew away from bodies, and they did not slow. Shots punched through torsos, so all the guts fell out, and clear air could be seen behind. But they came on. Even those whose legs were blasted away doggedly dragged themselves, hand over hand, towards the shore. There were more pressing targets to gun for. He would worry about the dead when they reached the island.
"Target the heretics! Kill the traitors!"
he shouted, brandishing his las pistol over the broken docks. Conveyors rumbled behind the tanks, pouring gravel into the narrowing sea. The hulking figures of traitor space marines walked beside them, whipping the hundreds of mortal slaves they brought to work for them, and lending a hand directly themselves, using their enhanced strength to toss boulders the weight of Devrus into the ocean. Devrus had not seen the plague marines so close for a while. There had been times, on other worlds, when he had faced them. Their appearance curdled his stomach nonetheless. His memories seemed too awful to be real. They had the enormity of lies. But the truth of the enemy was before him again. They were immense, hideous things, warped beyond sanity's capacity to understand. Devrus looked at them through his magnoculus and felt his fragile grip on reality slipping away from him. With the machine's aid, he could see the Death Guard's malformities in gruesome detail. The skin sloughing from flabby, exposed torsos, the fringes of luridly coloured tentacles poking out around armour plates, the limbs turned to whipping worms. Their stench was worse than the sight. They stank so much he could smell them over the frothing water, even through his rebreather. He thought if they came nearer, he might die simply by being in proximity to them. They smelled of disease, of the most hopeless hospitals in the worst of war zones, and the deepest, darkest plague pits. They should have been dead. Their wounds were severe and rotting, and their ailments obvious. Rather than weaken them and bring them to death, their afflictions made them strong. Their resilience was astounding. Their armour was close to scrap, but they shrugged off direct hits from las cannons and heavy bolters. Some of them waved cheerily when they were hit, or made juvenile noises. Their puerile behaviour only made them more terrifying. Devrus avoided looking at them through his magnoculars if he could help it. Not that he would need them for long to see the enemy in detail. They were close. The mole was only 100 meters from the shore, and every minute saw it creep a little bit closer. By his estimation, he had only an hour until they crossed the harbour and made it onto the island. Then the warped space marines would set foot upon Tyros's land, and there would be plague walkers in horrific multitude. What would take him, he wondered, the living or the dead? Dark clouds bunched over the siege tanks. Cold wind, rank with damp and mould, blew from the shore.
Fire!
He shouted again. Once more, the beams of las cannons slammed into the blades, pushing rock, soil, and bone into the churning ocean. Rotary cannons on the fronts of the tanks replied. Bullets whined, furious and insectile, past the defenders of the shore. Devereux's engineers had strengthened the forward defences, making as good a redoubt as they could. A new wall constructed of shipping containers filled with rockcrete fronted the harbour, making a layered defence of three lines. Behind these barriers, the men were safer, but the volume of bullets was great. Chance shots were common, and many died.
Fire!
He ordered again. Heavy bolter rounds raked across poxwalkers and Death Guard, hammering the former down, tearing chunks from the latter. The dead kept on coming, and the diseased heretic space marines stood on open ground, inviting further tests of their fortitude with arms thrown wide. Worst of all, when the humans working alongside the traitors fell dead, they were not long in getting back up, their faces fixed with the rictus of the poxwalkers. They shambled forward, joining the mass.
Fire!
Devereux said. His voice faltered. Over the mole, a vortex of black smoke and sickly light formed. Mighty beings came to the front in the number of seven. Space marine witches, draped in rotting manskins and bearing staffs of gnarled green wood. They pointed their fetishes at the sea and chanted words that ripped at the air in twisting streamers, polluting the very fabric of reality itself. Men shouted in alarm,
"Witchery! Witchery! Sorcerers!"
The sea boiled. White foam on grey water turned to black scum on stinking slime. The water jellied from liquid to solid. Squirming things pushed up through the thickening ocean, and a mat of pulsing veins formed, leaking ichor into the sea from dribbling nexuses. Flesh grew and spread between. Devereux recognized the shapes and form of Parmenio's native marine flora and fauna in the growing mat, but hideously twisted and enlarged before all semblance to natural things collapsed into the morass of flesh. This abomination wriggled its way across the ocean, grasping with elongating pseudopods at the pilings of the waterfront and wrapping themselves fast around them with wet, suckering sounds. As the fringed vanguard of the fleshway reached the shore, the back end solidified, going from disparate, filmy patches of matter to a solid causeway of pulsing, diseased life. A briny, rotten stink came from it, perceptible through his environmental gear. Vapours rose and stole ashore, switching this way and that with a life of their own. They appeared like shreds of ordinary ocean mist, but they were predatory and aware.
Fire!
Shouted Devereux. He was close to panicking. He couldn't show it, or his men would flee.
Shoot the bridge! Shoot the bridge!
At once, the heavy weapons emplaced along the shore fired, pummeling the surface of the living causeway. Their efforts were fruitless. Many shots rebounded from rubbery skin, deflected away from the unnatural organism by warpcraft. The surface throbbed and boomed, a linear drum sending out sprays of water with each impact. Where hits did catch on the flesh and penetrate, black fluids bubbled forth and poured as killing slicks into the sea. All around the causeway, things were dying. Sea life bobbed to the surface, crawling already with decay.
Sir! Sir!
A sergeant called. His frantic pointing directed Devereux's attention to the far side. The tanks, thankfully, did not proceed. There was an apparent limit to the bridge's carrying capacity. But the infantry were coming, preceded by huge drifts of droning, evil-looking flies. The Death Guard were shrouded by them, their massive shapes hidden amid the swirling mass. With comical lopes, they bounded across, using the give and bounce of the mat to propel them, proving their invulnerability to the firepower of the Astra Militarum. Heavy weapons fire and lasgun fusillade alike were swallowed up by the flies, whose shifting clumps made false figures while obscuring those that were real. The thumping of the enemy's self-propelled mortars started up afresh. This time, no viral bombs were cast, but simple explosives instead. Shells slammed hard into the makeshift defences, blasting out the sides of the containers with wrenching bangs. The mist was worse, creeping up to soldiers silently and worming its way through the smallest of gaps. Those chosen by the vapour died horribly. They shook so hard their limbs broke. Vomited blood coloured the lenses of their masks red. Wounded men breathed their last in screaming agony. The lucky were annihilated instantly. Death reigned over the harbourside, and still the Death Guard were yet to open fire.
"Sound the retreat,"
Devereux told his bugler, gripped by the certainty of defeat.
"Now!"
The bugler clicked his heels and bravely ventured out of the bunker door with his face uncovered. His instrument demanded it. The clear music of the horn cut through the racket of war. As Devereux's officers and squad leaders caught the sound, it was joined by the far less melodious honking of air horns and the shrill of digital whistles passing on the command. Men shouted and began to fall back, all while shrieking shells rained down, and the diseased mist claimed more victims by touch alone. Devereux waited a moment. Unable to see much beyond the embrasure of the post, he judged the progress of the retreat by ear. When he guessed most of his men had begun to fall back, he turned to his new Voxman.
"Send a message. Now, bring down full bombardment on these coordinates."
"What coordinates?" the soldier asked dumbly.
"On our position. Tell the wall guns to shell this position."
The soldier stared back at him. Devereux swore and snatched the Voxhorn from his hand.
"This is Major Devereux. Watch code Ultima Phi. The enemy are breaking through. Prepare second line defenses. Commence bombardment of my sector immediately."
A crackle told him he had been heard, though the words were lost. The buzzing of the flies reached beyond human hearing, infesting the vox waves. The Death Guard were nearly over the water. A mob of disease-twisted Parmenians went before them, absorbing many shots that would otherwise have found their mark in the bodies of the traitors.
"We're leaving. Now," he said.
His command staff scrambled out. Devereux, as suited his temperament, left last. For the second time that week, Devereux found himself running away. The demon engines had been bad. This was far worse. A full frontal assault by some of the deadliest warriors in the galaxy. He ran through the port, dodging explosions, all thoughts of command gone from his head. He did not think at all. Instinct took over. His body demanded survival and wrested control from his conscious mind. A crane took a direct hit and fell sideways, clanging down not far from him. He was dodging its fall before he even noticed it toppling. A unit of men was obliterated only 20 meters away, turned from running, shouting, thinking beings to smoking char in an eye blink. All the city was firing now, obliterating its own port with its heavy wall guns. Devereux glanced back as he fled. The bombardment punched towers of yellow fire into the swirling mass of insects. There were, finally, dead heretic space marines lying upon the damp, rock-crete wharfs. But they were few and far between, and even if every one were felled by a lucky shot, the walking dead were too numerous to slay. They walked onwards, slow as a spill of tar towards the breach in the wall. Behind him, bolters fired. The bang of release, the hissing of their rocket motors, the wet thumps as they exploded inside living flesh made a roaring din. Terror had him. More than a fear of death, an invisible pall of fear was draped over the enemy, filling Devereux with cold, unthinking dread. He almost collapsed into a ball behind a stack of rusting barrels, there to await his end, but his body forced him on. The second defence line lay ahead, built atop the rubble of the broken wall and guarding the breach from attack. It was there Devereux had witnessed the child's gift. From inside, the defences seemed respectable. From outside, looking at the mighty edifice of the broken wall behind, they appeared inadequate. Enemy artillery was pounding the breach. Where it hit unblemished sections, the walls held, but those shots that found their target knocked chunks away, bringing down boulders of rockcrete and widening the gap. In the port, already medium-range fire from the Death Guard was pounding at the prefabricated line sections closing the way into the city. They cruelly targeted the shore guards' lines of escape, filling trenches with plasma and storms of whirling shrapnel, daring the fleeing men to take their chance between volleys. Devrus made for one of these deadly alleyways, hoping that he would be one of the few to make it through the buckled plasteel sallyports, while the enemy were looking to slay some other unfortunate. The pounding of the city's batteries deafened him. Giant towers of spray lofted high where they hit the sea, columns of broken rockcrete mingling with shattered corpses where they hit the land. Devrus did not hear the returning fire of the enemy creeping towards him. It all mingled into a raw wall of furious noise. Next, he knew, he was flying, knocked skywards by the ruthless slap of overpressure. The air was driven from his lungs so hard his vocal cords involuntarily sang. He glimpsed the ground rushing at him, and then that hit him too, and less gently. His ears rang. His vision lost colour. He felt displaced from himself. Even so, he staggered up, the drive to live too powerful to overcome, and limped towards the second line. The ringing in his ears shut out all external sound. He lost himself for a while into a foretaste of death. He came to, his environment suit and uniform shredded down the left-hand side, and his arm bleeding. He was leaning against the smoking wreck of a bunker, whose plascrete, liquefied by plasma strikes, dripped dangerously near to him. He expected to die, but a curious sight greeted him as his consciousness regathered itself. The flies had banked up, as if running into an invisible window. They battered at the obstacle, droning in annoyance. The dead passed this barrier, but as they walked through, they became enfeebled, and when shot, they fell easily and did not rise. Only the plague marines were unimpeded, but they felt something. Those of a jocular nature ceased their jokes and laughing. Those who were grim became grimmer still. Of most note were the sorcerers, whose power raced away from them as soon as they crossed the invisible line. Their enraged cries penetrated the battle noise. Devrus was amazed as they raised their rusted gauntlets and their warp-borne power fizzled and dribbled away. The enemy continued to advance. Their arcane might was diminished, but their guns still had teeth. A deadly crossfire hatched the kill zone between defense line and harbor. The Death Guard advanced through it carelessly, and although a handful more of them fell, it was far fewer than should have. Energy beams and bullets whined overhead, blasting apart the mob of living dead. Without the flies to choke off las beams and obscure targets, it made a little difference, but not enough. The heretic Astartes were still moving in. Lines of men formed a desperate rearguard, firing and retreating by ranks, blasting the approaching monstrosities at close range, then point-blank range. One more fell, then two, three. Only three. Hundreds of shots fired, enough to shatter an army, for three dead enemies. The Death Guard worked themselves up to a lumbering jog to close the distance. It could not be called a run. They were too obese and diseased for that, but their speed was deceptive. The men of Kalth admirably held their nerve and received the charge with fixed bayonets. The Death Guard swatted them aside. Men screamed as their bones were pulverized by heavy blows, and unnatural disease rooted itself in their organs. Even without their shrouds of flies and their sorcerers, the Death Guard were massacring the Astra Militarum. Dazed, Devrus prepared to die. He sank to his knees, grasped his Aquila pendant in his rubber-gloved right hand, and prayed. Roaring jet engines started him from his misery. A two-hulled gunship blustered overhead, guns barking, missiles streaking from its wings, and came to a hovering stop. Space marines leapt from its open doors, guiding their grav chutes into the heart of the enemy. They were of the Primaris type, skull-faced warriors with long knives. More wearing flight packs rocketed in after the giant assault craft, guns blazing. Further craft flew in, roaring to a stop and putting down. Adeptus Astartes in heavier armour deployed. The Death Guard abandoned their persecution of the Astra Militarum, turning their wrath on their hated brethren. Seeing the traitors face down Imperial Space Marines was terrifying. The energy released by the fighting shook the world. Clean-armoured Primaris Ultramarines battled rotting hulks. Now they were set against one another, Devereux could appreciate more how far the plague marines had fallen. The ferocity with which they fought the newcomers was telling. The Primaris marines reminded the Death Guard of what they had been. The two sides were evenly matched. The Primaris marines were durable, albeit in a different way to their damned cousins. They took hits that would obliterate a mortal man and fought on, though blows to the head or the chest seemed to kill them, whereas the plague marines absorbed all manner of pain before dying. The first line of Primaris marines to attack were gunned down by a hail of shot. As the first ranks of the plague marine band fired, their brothers behind pulled free mummified heads with wax-stoppered mouths and stitched eyes. Some of these were mounted on short poles in the manner of stick grenades, and they threw them in a similar manner, all of them at once, pelting the Primaris. The grenades slapped against them like rancid fruit, spilling diseased matter over their pristine armour. Paint bobbled and blackened. Ceramite, made brittle, shattered from movement alone. Space marines, who no mortal disease could kill, spasmed, bloody foam spurting from their breathing grills. Bolts hammered into the Death Guard, killing a few here and a few there. They dwindled, but still not quickly enough. The Primaris marines lost many in return. But the Death Guard's time on the shores of Tyros was short. Still more aircraft were flying in from the east. Despite their foul appearance, the Death Guard had lost none of their tactical acumen. Seeing reinforcements inbound, they formed up into a phalanx and began to retreat. The fire from the far side of the sea intensified. Shells rained down on the wharfs while lascannon barrages forced the gunships away. The Death Guard fell back under fire from the walls, defense line, and the ultramarines. They passed over the tongue of the bridge, their flies enveloping them again, and vanished into a fetid mist. Bigger guns were firing on the far side of the harbor channel. The Death Guard bombardment ceased shortly after, leaving Devereux reeling. It was not truly quiet. Gunships were dropping down and delivering space marines of old and new kinds, and their vox-mitted shouts were blaring and harsh. But without the shelling, without the constant crack of lasguns and cough of bolters, it seemed almost peaceful. The mist was creeping back. Gunfire flashed in the docks over the water. Devereux wrenched his mask off and vomited. Adrenaline left him a palsied wreck. With difficulty, he pushed away from the ruined bunker. By then, grav tanks were pushing across the ocean, their impellers forcing deep valleys into the sea and sending the displaced water up high. When they hit solid ground, the water crashed back down and cascaded from their sides. Their grav fields flattened everything, and their engines made a tremendous, growling pounding. Their ramps opened as soon as they crossed onto dry land, and more space marines jumped out. Medicaid personnel followed, dispersing towards the casualties. Devereux thought they would find few alive. Smaller lighters and unarmed shuttlecraft followed soon after. Many bore the helical badge of the Medicaid. These roared overhead, heading towards the city. Devereux limped through all the tumult. He had no clear idea of where he was going. A heavily decorated space marine was asking questions of a soldier on a casualty bier. The man raised a weak arm and pointed in the direction of Devereux. The warrior immediately made for him and announced himself.
"I'm Captain Sicarius of the Ultramarines Victrix Guard," he said. "You are the ranking officer here?"
"You took your damn time," said Devereux, all sense of deference battered from him by the fight.
"We are here now," he said. "You are Major Devereux?"
Devereux managed to straighten his back and nod.
"I am. My orders are to secure this city for the Primarch. Tell me, quickly, what is the manner of protection about this place?"
"I don't know what you mean."
"The enemy's magic was halted before the city perimeter. What caused this? Tell me now and do not lie. Tyros must be secured."
Devereux was puzzled.
"That wasn't you."
"It was not," said Sicarius.
Devereux's mind was a blank. The answer came to him unexpectedly, and with it his wits returned. He looked up at Sicarius wonderingly.
"The child. There is a child here. A wondrous child. Not far from adulthood.
but a child still. It must be her.
A psyker? Is she sanctioned? Sicarius took a step closer. The tone of his voice frightened Devereux.
She is not a psyker, said Devereux, with absolute certainty, though he knew as he spoke he had no claim to any knowledge that could back this statement. He just felt it.
What then? Said the Space Marine.
She is a miracle, said Devereux.
Sicarius's Vox equipment clicked as he switched channels. He did not enable privacy settings and spoke openly through his helm grill.
Inform the Tetrarch there is something strange here. I request his counsel. Tell the Primarch that I advise he wait before he puts down. This could be a trap.
The Primarch, said Devereux. An entirely different kind of terror afflicted him. Ridiculously, he reflected later, his first thought was for the battered state of his uniform.
The Primarch is coming here.
Gilliman had returned in the time of Devereux's great-grandfather, but he never thought to actually see him, even when the news came he was retaking the planet. Devereux thought he would fight in the same war as the Lord of Ultramar, but to actually see him. Gilliman was as much a myth to Devereux as he had been to earlier generations, when he still languished in stasis.
Not yet, said Sicarius. Not until I have had chance to vet this child for deviancy.
I shall...
Sicarius held up his hand for silence while he listened to a private message. The Space Marine growled and looked skywards. More ships were racing down.
Damn all priests, he said.
He looked at Devereux, who saw accusation flashing in his ruby eye lenses.
"Do you know what is happening in the city?" he demanded.
"What?"
Devereux said, afraid again. Having given in once to fear, it took him for its plaything.
"This procession," barked Sicarius. "This child of yours at its head. I have reports from my scouts. The whole damn population is on the streets. You're in charge here, correct?"
Devereux shook his head numbly, though he was in charge. "My Voxman is..."
He looked about, helpless. The giants in blue were so arresting, he couldn't see anything else. His eyes wouldn't let him.
"I don't know where he is. My equipment's ruined. I've been down here since dawn. No contact. I told them to stay indoors. I ordered it."
Sicarius gave him a conciliatory grunt.
"You lead from the front. Hard fight."
He switched Vox channels.
"Captain Sicarius to Strike Force Tyros Relief. Secure the harbour areas on the mainland and the island."
He responded tersely to replies Devereux could not hear. On the far side of the water, fire flash and explosion skipped across the docks. The ongoing fight drew away from the river sea grudgingly, pulling its pall of mist after it. The revealed shore was a skeleton yard of tumbled structures. Three Space Marines in armour that exceeded in beauty all artwork Devereux had ever seen jogged up to the captain and wordlessly walled him in. Sicarius became a blue keep in a cobalt fortress encrusted with gold.
"You are coming with me," Sicarius said to Devereux. "Now!"